The session today is customer level exit analysis and lifetime value, and our speaker is Carolina Stevenson from Quantium. Carolina Stevenson is a principal of Quantium, specializing in pricing and market analysis within the insurance industry and in the wider financial services market. She has a particular strong focus on providing advice for pricing in a range of industries. She was previously with QBE Commercials, Trowbridge Consulting and Goldman Sachs in Germany. Her presentation will take about 35 minutes, and so because of the shorter time for this session, I'll just ask Carolina to start her presentation.
Okay, thank you very much for making the time. What I wanted to talk about today is to really put the whole topic in the context of thinking about valuing different portfolios and calculating a value of a portfolio. And start by, I guess, touching briefly initially on sort of the traditional appraisal value type approaches that might be taken. Talk about how we can go about calculating the components and how we might improve some of the current techniques that are out there. And then how that can feed through to actually calculating a customer level view of value and using customer lifetime value to actually work out portfolio strategies. So just to start with, if we're thinking about a standard appraisal value type calculation, usually what's done is it's done at a product level view using cohort-based analysis. So we work out, all right, what's our current in force? How do we expect that to reduce over time due to exits? All at a total product view, and predict that over the next few years. Additionally, we bring in new product sales, regardless of who's actually buying those. We just bring in a total level of new product sales, and again, those will reduce over time due to exits, and we do that for each of the next few years. We then overlay value assumptions, future price increases, those types of things, and discount it back to come up with an appraisal value of that particular product. Sum all of those up and come up with a portfolio value. What I wanted to do is talk a little bit about how we might actually calculate each of those different components, so our exits, our value, those types of things, and refine that to a greater degree. And then think about how we can actually turn this concept of portfolio value around and think about it a bit more from a customer perspective. Traditionally, if we use exit analysis as an example, traditionally our exit analysis would be based on cohort-based analysis, where you're looking at sort of total exits over time from a product. You might drill into it a little bit, getting a broad understanding of sort of some of the effects and some of the impacts of different factors, such as payment frequency, such as distribution channel, those types of aspects, and have a look at, well, what are some of the broad things that are going on? However, when you're looking at that in aggregate, it can be very hard to actually separate out the impact of different concurrent drivers and understand what is it that's actually driving this behaviour, what is it that's actually causing my portfolio to act in the way that it is. That's where the concept of, I guess, looking at it from a customer point of view comes in. And what we want to try and do is we actually want to try and drill into our exit experience or value or whatever it is that we're looking at in terms of the individual component and understand it from the customer's perspective. I'm going to illustrate this with a bit of a case study where we had a situation where there was a client looking at their portfolio, and we're looking at it sort of in aggregate and saying, okay, well, we've got this sort of overall exit experience. We can see that our exit experience has been going down over the last few years. That's probably a good thing. We're pretty happy with what's happening there. As well as that, on a cohort basis, they were having a look at, well, let's just try and understand what's happening within that portfolio and sort of see how our exit experience is varying by different factors. For example, if we just take a simple one-way cut of our experience by payment frequency, we can see that yearly policies seem to be exiting more than monthly policies. Drilling into that a little bit deeper, they then cut this by year and went, well, hang on. In 2003, yearly policies were actually exiting less frequently than monthly policies, and then the last 2 years they've been exiting more frequently. What's actually going on there? What's the true effect of my payment frequency? by looking at it sort of at this aggregate level, it's quite hard to drill into that and to understand that. So you need to actually try and apply different techniques. What we've found very successful in doing this is to actually use generalised linear modelling techniques, which are used heavily within general insurance, to start building up customer level models. So you set up your modelling framework to take every single customer and all of their customer characteristics, the details of the products they hold, what kind of price we're charging them, other data like which distribution channel they're coming through, advisor characteristics, broad economic indicators, all of those types of things. You put all of that information on the single customer record, and then you have an indicator that says, did that customer exit or not? And you build a predictive model to say, well, how does my exit experience vary with all of these different factors that I've put onto my individual customer records? By doing that and by taking into account all of those factors simultaneously, we can drill into what we call the pure effect of a particular factor. That's the impact of that factor holding everything else constant. And in this case, what we actually found was that the pure effect of payment frequency was exactly the opposite way around to what was seen in the observed experience. In fact, yearly payment frequency policies were less likely to exit than monthly payment policy frequencies. So why then, when we do a one-way cut, do we see something that looks exactly the other way around? Well, to understand that, we need to dig a little bit deeper. And the answer can be found in other factors. This chart here shows you the cut of payment frequency policies by another factor, which is the payment method. And we can see that about 60% of yearly policies are paid by the manual payment channel, whereas monthly policies are almost all paid by direct debit or credit card. If we then look at the pure effect of our payment method, we can actually see that manual payment methods are much, much more likely to exit than our direct debit and credit card payment methods. Probably not a surprise to anyone here. But I guess what we can see is when we actually allow for that effect, we can predict that observed experience. So what we're seeing here is that observed experience that we've seen before, plus the predicted exit experience that we would expect to see with that model, which incorporates that pure effect of payment frequency that goes the other way, but also incorporates payment method and a range of other factors. What you'll want to do is you want to allow for a whole range of different factors, and each of those will have different shapes. So you'll get things like, well, my exit experience will decrease with tenure. It increases with some insured, but only up to a certain point, and then you start to get diminishing returns. And you start to understand how each of these different factors drive your exit experience. And you can use that overall to then pull out, well, what is my underlying trend and what's actually happening in my portfolio? And in this case, what we found was that the exit experience was actually deteriorating. And looking at that broad initial graph that I showed you that showed a decreasing trend by exit experience can actually be misleading and can cause you to draw incorrect conclusions about the portfolio and perhaps lead to incorrect strategies. It should be worth saying one of the primary effects that was driving this kind of different factor was actually a change in mix of business by tenure, and that we were getting quite a few more longer tenure policies. There was fewer new policies coming into the overall portfolio, which masked the impact of a deteriorating trend overall. Just an interesting aside, you can also use this sort of information or this sort of modelling to try and drill into some of your price effects a little bit further. Now, what this chart shows you is the impact on lapses and cancellations of the change in premium. So we've got our dollar change in premium with higher changes in premium over on this side of the graph and lower increases over here. And if we just focus on this dark blue line initially, you can see that the higher the premium increase, the higher you would expect your lapse and cancellation rate to be. And you can start to get an understanding of what that relationship is. Interestingly enough, that can actually be different for different subsegments of your portfolio. And in this case, what we've got is we've got a much steeper curve for your newer policies than you do for policies that have been with you for a longer time period. So the price sensitivity of your customers is decreasing the longer they hold the policy. So if you're thinking about perhaps a closed portfolio that is not making sufficient profits that you want to bring back towards profitability, you can understand some of these sorts of effects and perhaps have greater confidence in putting through bigger price increases if you have an older distribution than you might have in a newer portfolio. Or, alternatively, you can load this type of thing into a scenario testing tool and start looking at, well, what is my expected impact of different pricing strategies? So if I target some different pricing strategies that get an overall fairly similar average change in premium, but I want to understand what my, say, retention experience is or what my renewal rate is under this strategy or another strategy, you can start to understand the expected impact of your lapses through having built these kind of models, loaded in, and perhaps do some what-if type scenario analysis before you need to make the pricing decision, before you need to go live in the market. Obviously very valuable. So the key things to take away from this type of analysis is that it helps you detect distorted trends. We can use it to take targeted pricing or other action on the portfolio. And I guess the third point, which links us back to looking at our value calculations, is that you need to take into account the appropriate trends and exit experience when you're looking at your value calculations. It's quite common to look at, well, my change in mix of business is acting this way, and I'm getting this sort of overall trend in my exits overall, so I need to allow for both in the value analysis. But if the underlying trend in your exits is actually driven by the change in the mix of business, you need to be careful to make sure that you're not actually double counting when you're doing this type of analysis. Having gone through each of your components of the appraisal value, the value calculation, I want to now revisit this thought and sort of say, okay, well, we know how we can get each of our exit models, we know how we can look at value at customer level, we can build these kind of models. Let's now think about how we might actually incorporate that into a value calculation. And the key with it is that we want to move away from doing this type of calculation at a product level, and we want to move it to a customer level. So we can do this exact calculation for every single customer in your portfolio, taking into account what is their current product that they hold, how likely are they to exit from that product, what likelihood do they have of purchasing additional products, either this same product or other products that you might offer, and use that to build up a customer lifetime value view, which you can then sum up for all of the customers in a particular portfolio and get a portfolio point view of what is this actually worth. Why do we want to bother doing that? Well, a lot of companies are moving away from a product-focused view to a customer-focused view because it gives them a better interface with the actual customer experience. When a customer, when they come to you, say you're a bank and you've got a customer doesn't think of you as, okay, I've got my home loan, and that's a separate experience to my transaction account, which is a separate experience to my credit card, which is a separate experience to the personal loan I might have, or the second credit card, or the savings account, or whatever else the products are. They see it as a holistic experience. Well, I'm with this bank, and I have these products, and these are the services and prices that this bank offers me. So you want to try and align with that to give them a better customer experience and to also understand better which segments of the portfolio are really generating value and therefore might be segments of the portfolio that you might be willing to invest more money in. One good example of that, again I'm going to use a banking example, is if you think about young customers with a bank. Usually, if you think about teenagers, uni students, that type of thing, they're often on fee-exempt sort of accounts. They're actually loss-making and loss-leading for a bank when they're trying to invest in this customer segment. But the banks will invest in them in the hope of retaining those customers over the longer term and then getting a slice of the much higher revenue that you expect to get from these customers when down the track they use their credit cards more heavily, when they purchase homes and get home loans, those types of effects. How much should I actually invest in that segment, though, is a different question, and it's where these types of techniques can actually help you answer that. If we want to do that, well, how do we go about it? What we actually need to start thinking about is we need to start thinking about what does each customer do and what is the kind of path over time that they go through, if you like. So we might have somebody who starts with a credit card in year one, still only has a credit card in year two, but then takes up a transaction account in year three, holds that for a couple of years, and then down the track purchases a home and gets a home loan as well. That's one possible path they could go through. They could also go through a path where they say, well, I've got my credit card for 2 years and then I'm just going to lapse, and they leave the bank and go somewhere else. And whatever path they go onto, the likelihood that they go into each of these paths will depend on their characteristics at each point in time. What's their age? What are their current product holdings? What's their experience with the bank overall been? So we need to start building a valuation model that dynamically incorporates the customer characteristics at each point in time. Once you start getting to lots and lots and lots of products, the path volumes start to exponentiate dramatically. If you think about just two products, we start with one product initially. In year one, there's four different states that we could have. Say we're talking about a credit card and a transaction account, and we've started with a credit card only. You could have a situation where they lapse their credit card, don't take up a transaction account, and you're left with no products. They could just retain the credit card, not take out a transaction account. That's state two. They could take out retain their credit card and take out a transaction account. State three. Or they could lapse their credit card but take out a transaction account with you instead. So four states. In year two, we're starting from any number of four situations, and again, for each of those, we've got another four states that the customer could move into, and so forth and so forth. Once you start to get to five products and, say, 5 years, just tracking what state a customer is in gets you in excess of 33 million potential paths. If you then think about the fact that the utilisation of credit cards or the value that you might get from each of these customers potentially is dependent on the state that you're in as well, you can see that the volume of paths that you're potentially going to get is going to be huge. And I'm going to come back to that a little bit later. What I want to stress before we go on to the sort of the value, the number of paths, and I guess why you'd want to bother going down this route, is to just actually say that even if you're only thinking about a single product view and if you've got a single product hat on, it's still important to consider other customer holdings and the other products that they have. What this chart shows you is the expected value over time of that comes from just your transaction account. The kind of greeny sort of line is the expected value that we would expect in each time period if we only considered the transaction account and ignored all of the other product holdings that the customer had. Whereas the blue line takes into account the impact of your other products on the likelihood of retaining your credit card, retaining your transaction account, and of actually using your transaction account. Because you might have a transaction account that you use very, very infrequently, or you might have a transaction account that you use for all of your day-to-day banking. And whichever way you go will have different value implications for the bank in terms of the fees and charges that they are able to collect, and also how much it actually costs the bank to deliver the service. That's a single product view. If we then took a single product view and just took each of, in this case, three products, and sorry, the light blue line here is quite hard to see, but what I've tried to do here is I've taken the single product view from one product, then put on top of that a single product view from another product, and then put on top of that again a single product view from a third product, and compared that with what you'd actually calculate as a customer level view if you considered all three of those products simultaneously. you can start to see that you're actually potentially getting quite a significant shortfall at customer level in terms of the value that you're incorporating into your valuation model. Not only that, but you also need to think about things like tenure effects. And I guess coming back to the point of the huge number of paths, really the only way that you can deal with that huge number of paths is to start looking at a stochastic approach and a simulation approach, from which we can work out, well, what's my stochastic mean for the portfolio that I'm looking at? And we also get some information about the kind of spread around that and I guess the uncertainty we've got in the value, which is useful information in itself. Not only that, it gives you an advantage about a simple, I guess, Markov chain type approach where you're only thinking about, well, what's the state I'm currently in and where might I go each time, without thinking about the full path because of the impact of tenure effects. Usually you'll find that the longer somebody's been with you, the less likely they are to exit. So the higher the potential value that you'd expect to get from them is. If we use a simple deterministic approach where we just consider the current state, which is a simplification you might think to do to get that 33 million paths down to something that's a bit more manageable, what you'll tend to find is that you'll actually come up with an expected value that is somewhat lower than your stochastic mean, and you'll understate the value of a particular segment. How much lower? Well, that'll depend on how important the tenure effects are in your underlying models. Another quick aside, I guess, to plug the stochastic approach a bit more is to say if you do end up doing taking a stochastic or a simulation approach to doing this kind of work, you can actually start not only get an understanding of, well, what's my spread around my expected value, you can also get an understanding of, if I want to take a single product view, how does one product view compare with another product view? And what we've got here is a scatter plot of the number of savings accounts we would expect a customer to hold relative to the number of transaction accounts we would expect that same customer to hold. And not surprisingly, you can see some sort of correlations within that. So you can start to understand what's actually going on in the portfolio from a customer point of view, and what do my customers look like? What sort of products do they purchase? What sort of product, if they purchase this sort of product, what other sort of products might they be interested in? If you look at this with personal loans and home loans, you get a different sort of picture because those two products can be substitutes for one another. And if you can roll up the costs in your home loan, you're not going to take a high interest personal loan for obvious reasons. The key things to take away from the whole presentation, I guess, that I wanted you to think about is, one, going back to initial thinking about our appraisal value, saying, well, you want to think about the components not just from the basis of a cohort level, but you also want to think about it from a customer perspective, because that will allow you to really understand the drivers that are happening in the portfolio and avoids the risk that you draw incorrect conclusions where you think, well, this factor is actually acting in one way, when in actual fact it's masking the impact of another effect. The example that I had was payment frequency and payment method, and allows you to, well, it's masking the effect of another factor, and therefore makes you think that, say, payment frequency is a lot worse than, yearly payment frequency is a lot worse than it actually is. You also then need to incorporate a multi-product view into thinking about a calculation of value, because a single product view of calculating value is going to give you results that will understate the value in general, because your exit experience will be lower for customers that hold multiple products than it will be for customers that hold only one. Why do I also need to do that? It's because because organisations are moving to a customer level view. And it's important that the analysis that you do to help assess the value of different segments or to understand what's going on in that portfolio follows suit, because otherwise you'll end up not matching the needs of the organisation, and we as actuaries need to adapt and make sure that what we deliver in terms of advice will line up with the way that the company is trying to think about its business model. Which means that we need to go beyond current appraisal value approaches, looking at customer level modelling and drawing on simulation techniques.
That's it. Thank you, Caroline. Most interesting and thought-provoking presentation.
I just said I went much faster than expected. I always do that.
Yes, you do very well on time, actually. So we have, by my watch, about 25 minutes for questioning. Before we start, I should just mention the rules, that I'd like to get as many questions heard and answered as possible. So if you could limit your comment or questions to no more than a few minutes so that lets other people have a go. And also, before we start, if I could ask anyone who's got a question to give me a show of hands so I could see how rigorously I need to enforce that rule. No question, I don't need to enforce any rule. can I invite you to have questions then and pose them to Carolina?
Yeah, it's John Bullman here. What I was trying to get at was that if the bank changes some of their policies, say increase their fees and things like that, you'll get changes in underlying customer actions, and so that will be impacting also your customer level analysis if you don't incorporate those and how you come up with your factors for deriving your model. Yep. You'll also lose or have some of the distortions you've shown by doing the high level cohort analysis.
I think very good question. What you need to do in doing that is if there are changes, and I guess the key is that when you're building your customer level models, you need to throw in factors that try and explain all of the aspects that might drive behaviour. So you'll bring in customer level factors, you'll bring in product related factors. If you've had a change in policy or a change in conditions, a change in price, all of those types of, you'd have price variables, you'd have indicators variables to say, well, at this point here we've changed our underwriting conditions and we can understand how, based on those sorts of how that helps to drive the situation, change the customer behaviour, and to try and separate that out from the behavioural aspects that are controlled by the customer.
Martin Mulcair. I'm interested in the availability of data at customer level. I think most people here would agree the need to take a customer level view. Mm-hmm. But historically, of course, most financial institutions have had a product-centric approach with product-based systems. Could you comment on the availability of data at customer level and any trends that way?
I guess what I'd say is that it is possible, even with a product level system, to try and drill into it and try and get into, I guess, customer level data. Certainly we've done this kind of work for both life insurance and banking and that kind of thing, drawing on product level systems, but using data manipulation and, I guess, matching through identifiers and that kind of thing to build up a product level view. Now, having said that, that can be a little bit of an intensive exercise initially, and it takes a bit of, I guess, manipulation. However, it is very possible, and it's something that as actuaries we're well placed to do with the kind of skills that we develop in analysing and working with data. The good news is that there are more trends in terms of companies actually moving towards more customer-centric systems, but there is still some way to go there. So in the interim, we will still have to draw things together, but it's eminently achievable.
Hi, Matthew Wood, Zurich. The other data issue, I think, is having enough data. Isn't that one of the main problems? It sounds a great idea in theory, but I don't know if most companies have enough data to go on. But ultimately, it seems to me it's heading towards a scenario where, rather than having sort of broad lapse rates across a product range, each individual policy or each individual customer has their own lapse rate. But I think that's a bit of a dream. I don't think we have enough data to do that.
I guess the answer I'd say to that is that if you've got enough data to look at it, I mean, in general, these sorts of techniques are actually designed to be able to draw out trends from, statistically significant trends from information even where you don't have necessarily that much information. And if you're looking at it from a cohort-based level, you'd almost need more data to be able to really understand the underlying drivers if you're looking at it based on single cuts of the data to really understand, or sort of two-way cuts, three-way cuts of the data to actually get to the individual cell level that will allow you to understand what's going on there. Whereas if you're applying generalized linear modeling techniques, it can take into account that you don't have to have every single combination at the same time. You can draw on the information that you've got on other policies, and you can actually, to some extent, do it with less data than you might think. And certainly, most life insurance books would have the kind of data volumes that you're looking for to be able to apply this.
I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an idea of what sort of data volume have you worked with? Like, what is the lowest data volume that you've worked with?
In life insurance or in general?
Either.
Either. I mean, we've built models of this kind and got useful insights with as few as 1,000 observations. So it's they're quite I guess at that point you're starting to bring in more judgments than you would if you've got more policies and that kind of thing. But you can get information with, as I said, quite low levels of data.
Almost forgot my question. Trang Duncanson from Deloitte. I was just wondering, with your analysis, to what extent you've used external data and what sort of external data might be useful in a life insurance or banking context?
Mm-hmm. We try and use whatever data we can get our hands on in terms of this, and we will use external data. I'm going to use a banking example to make it things like interest rates in the market more generally, indicators of, say, housing market approvals in total, to try and get a view for, well, what's the market in total doing in terms of applications for home loans, to get, a forward indicator of broad trends, which in the current environment of rising interest rates and that kind of thing is particularly pertinent. Unemployment rates, census data, whatever external data you can get your hands on, you can throw into the model. And I guess the beauty of it is that you can test whether it's significant or not, and you use the model to tell you whether it's relevant or not and what kind of effect it has. So if you've got it, throw it in, see what it shows you, and only keep it if there's actually a statistically significant indication that it seems to matter.
Hi there, it's Ian Bull-Craig from Tower Australia here. I'm curious about the theory that people, if they've got one product with a company, will take out another one. It sort of feels intuitively right, but it sort of goes against diversification and what we preach as actuaries ourselves. What sort of studies have there been in terms of the likelihood for people to take, to sort of, you know, increase their, yeah, I guess, exposure to a particular provider if they've had a good experience?
We incorporate those factors into these kind of models, and we tend to find that it's a general thing that you see, but the strength of the likelihood will vary from institution to institution, and it will also, it'll depend on your brand strength and all those types of things. I guess it comes down to how entrenched your customers are with you. And somebody like one of the big four banks is going to have customers that are much more entrenched than a new challenger in the market, like an HSBC or a Citibank or something like that, that are less well known. So you tend to get that type of effect, but it will depend on the actual customers that you've got and, I guess, the sophistication of the customers that you have as well. So certain brands might attract more sophisticated buyers of financial services products that are more likely to diversify, whereas other brands will attract customers who have banked with this bank all their lives. They're happy with that bank, so when it comes time to buy the next product, they're most likely to go with their existing provider.
I have a question for Carolina. I'm interested in the ideas, all the ideas that you put up, and they seem very intuitively very attractive. I wonder how many companies are there, obviously have to be multi-line, multi-business companies, are using these techniques already, and how successful do they find them?
There's a few companies out there. It is still relatively new in the space, but there are a number of companies, say probably four or five or so that I'm aware of, that are using these types of techniques and, I guess, spearheading into it from an analysis point of view. coming back to the point you said that you have to be a multi-line provider, I think you have to be a multi-line provider to look at the kind of customer lifetime value with simulation techniques. I'd actually say that for the exit analysis or likelihood to purchase analysis or value analysis or that kind of thing, you can draw value of this even if you are only a single product provider, because you can still understand what's happening in the portfolio a bit better by applying those techniques.
If there's no more questions, thank you, Carolina, for your very informative presentation. And please join me in thanking Carolina.